Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Backyard Labrish. This is Margaret Marshall, your host. Today is August 14th, 2010, and I want to welcome you to the backyard. And I want to thank the listeners calling in and those listening online and those who may come by later on to listen. Backyard Labrish is here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And this evening, we are going to be labrishing about the postcard from paradise, as it was so described. We're talking about Jamaica's grand hotels of the past. Because here in the backyard, this labrish is dedicated to the people who love history, to the Jamaicans who perhaps grew up before the new Jamaica was born, and that would be before independence. And we're just reminiscing, finding out things we didn't know before because we were so busy growing up and having fun. And perhaps left the island when we were young. We're all rooted all over the world and scattered all over the universe. But we still love the island we were born on. And I just get together with a couple of my online fans to just talk about the good old days, learn some things that we, as I said, we were too busy to notice or know about when we were younger, hoping that this will be of some interest to the younger generation and those to come after us. I also like to use this platform to encourage the senior Jamaicans or seniors all over the world to leave a living memory of what things were like when they grew up in their parts of the world, because we need to use the new technology to tell our old stories so that the new generation can have a little glimpse into our personalities and how we viewed things as we were growing up. Because, you know, sometimes you could read something, but if you hear it expressed by voice, I know for me, you sort of can connect to it a little better. So one of the things I'd love to do before I even start the content this evening is to encourage you to be a part of the Labrish by calling in if you are want to listen on the telephone, or you can actually listen online. I'd like to get you on my mailing list if you're not on it yet. But how you would listen is by calling, how you'd be part of the language is by calling in on 1-718-5, just a minute, let me get the number, because your number is different from mine. So the number would be 718, and I'm not very technical this evening, so please bear with me. I'm having a little challenge with my technology because, you know, I'm a senior, so I'm winging it here. So bear with me, young folks, while I get the number for you. Now, first of all, let me just tell you that you can go to backyardlabrish.com and leave a comment and even listen to the show there. But forget about that because I can't. Oh, just a minute. I think I know what I have to do here. However, it's not working. So I am going to go right into my show this evening because I'm using a little laptop. My big computer somehow not responding to me. So I'm going to plan B. I see a raised hand on my keyboard, so I'm going to open up the mic to that caller because a Labrish is all about being relaxed and talking about a subject that you may have interest in, getting together with your friends, and I have a friend on board right now that's raising their hand, so I'm going to open up the mic and welcome them. So I have 631-451. Your mic is open. This is Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have?
Hi, Margaret. This is Janine from Long Island.
Hi, Janine.
Hi. The number to call in if you want to be a part of the Labrish is 718-766-4558. So please call us, okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
You're
it's
welcome.
So good to have helpers and loyal listeners like you. But how are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
Great. I'm doing wonderful. You did mention where you're calling from?
Yes, from Long Island.
Oh, what's the weather like there?
Oh, rainy. Very
oh,
rainy.
Well, at least it cools things down.
Not really. It brings it even hotter, but
wow.
We have been having a lot of rain.
Right, right.
We're going to have some more tonight, too, right into the weekend, so it's not really a sunny week.
I got you. But we'll just pretend that we are, it's perfect weather in Jamaica.
Yes.
We're there back in the days in our easy chair under our favorite fruit tree on the beach or on our verandas or even up on the deck. Do you remember, Janine, in the days when we had the you could go up on the roof of the buildings?
In Jamaica?
Uh-huh, the flat roof buildings, and you could go up on the roof and just hang out?
No, to be honest, I don't remember.
Oh, well, I remember that we used to have roof parties.
Oh.
Because we had flat roofs.
Oh, you mean the balcony?
I forgot the name. It's the balcony?
The balcony, yes.
Okay. Are they still building the houses like that anymore?
I'm not sure. But
flat roofs.
I
know
sure.
They were terribly hot.
But during my time, they had quite a few.
Right. Okay. So we'll just pretend we're up there and it's the trade winds are
yes.
blowing gently
yes.
across the island. So I am excited this evening because I'm going to be connecting two events together because I think they're relevant, and I always like to tie in something from the past that I'm excited about with the now, and perhaps it will be helpful for the future.
Okay.
So the first thing I want to do is give credit to the material I'm using because I have gotten so many interesting pieces from Pieces of the Past, which is a segment on the Gleana Company, and most of the articles that I've used have been written by Dr. Rebecca Tortello. Now, I've never met Dr. Tortello, but I can tell you I really appreciate her, and I'm sure that many of my listeners do also, because that section of the Gleaner is really bringing a lot of information that, you know, you would have to go all over the internet to find. Yes. So I really appreciate that, and I want to give credit to the doctor for her great work. So I'm going to be reading from Pieces of the Past right now, and then I'll go into the story about how the two articles are connected. Both of these events are documented there. So if you want the details, just Google Pieces of the Past, Jamaican Gleaner, and you'll get to it. Now, it's the headline is Postcards from Paradise, Jamaica's Grand Hotels. What are you thinking about, you northern men and women who rush to Florida or Bermuda or Europe in search of a winter resort? Why do you not know of this lost Garden of Eden, this incomparable combination of American comfort, English cleanliness, and Italian climate, and such beauty, such glory of coloring, such opulence of nature's best gifts? There are no reptiles, and there is fruit and vegetables enough to keep one well and healthy at small cost, with small labor. America cannot be long blind to the wonderful advantages offered by this beautiful spot as a winter resort. So wrote the much-traveled author Ella Wheeler Wilcox in the early 1900s. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And I was reading verbatim from the article, but I was so fascinated. I'm always fascinated by the writers of the past, how they place their words, what words they use to describe things. I always find it fascinating because it's sort of different from how we would describe something now.
Right. Now
I'm going back to the article. During this time, travelers to Jamaica came aboard United Fruit Company's steamers and also New Yorkers, particularly on the Hamburg American Line West Indian cruises. A round trip from New York cost $75 and took 5 to 6 days. Now, I tell you, Janine, we have 5 and 6 day cruises now, but it's more like on a sale, $750.
Yes.
So I saw a relationship right there.
Yes.
Because now, not only New Yorkers, as this writer was referring to, but the whole world, you know about, perhaps not where they were going then,
mm-hmm.
but people experiencing winter climates definitely know about the beautiful island of Jamaica. And part of what the show is tonight is to sort of enlighten ourselves and hopefully the visitors who will come by later or on the board now of how this all got started. Because I was really very fascinated to find out.
Right.
So I'm back to the article again. Jamaica has provided first-class accommodation since the late 1800s. In 1890, the Jamaica Hotel Law was passed to jumpstart the hotel industry. It authorized the government to guarantee the principal plus 3% interest on all debentures issued by hotel companies. This was done in great part to stimulate the staggering of Jamaica's Great Exhibition of 1891. Mm. Now, let me go to the article that is the Great Exhibition of 1891. So what I'm talking about here is that you can see that because of that law,
yes.
it sort of created the hotel industry because they were getting a rebate sort of thing.
Right.
You know, just like how we know here in the United States where the government gives a rebate or a discount on taxes to encourage certain things.
Right.
So you see the relationship there that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How, you know, it's just politics now, of course, is quite different in some ways.
Right.
But in other ways, it hasn't changed.
No.
So, okay. Now, the we did a show sometime last year about the Great Exhibition in details. But I didn't see, I don't know if I referenced this connection a lot. So I want to sort of fill that in right now. In 1890, this is also, I don't see her name right up top, but quite likely Dr. Tortello contributed to this particular article too, which is on the pieces of the past. Now it says, in an 1890 letter to the people of Jamaica, Governor Harris Blake attempted to rally support of Jamaicans to the cause of the Great Exhibition of 1891. The exhibition itself was the dream of a native Jamaican, A.C. Sinclair. Aren't we familiar with that name, Janine?
It sounds familiar.
That name is very familiar, very familiar when I was growing up in Jamaica.
Yes, Sinclair,
One of the compilers of the annual handbook of Jamaica, Sinclair was inspired by the 1851 Great Exhibition in London's Crystal Palace. In other words, that inspired him. So he had a dream to do the same thing in Jamaica. Now, he tried in vain for many years to drum up support for his ambitious project. Now, when Sir Henry Blake arrived as Jamaica's new governor in March of 1889, Sinclair managed to persuade William Fawcett, F-A-W-C-E-E-T-T. I'm familiar with that name, too. Not necessarily William, but, you know, I remember that name in Jamaica when I was growing up. Yes. Director of Gardens, that man was the Director of Gardens and Plantations and Chairman of the Institute of Jamaica, to help him present his cause to Governor Blake. So here again, you know, you see how when you know the right people,
Yes.
you can get your word in or your cause heard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Governor Blake was so enthusiastic that at a public meeting in September, he put three resolutions before the leading gentlemen of Kingston, one of which requested Jamaican gentlemen to act as guarantors to the extent of £10 or more.
Wow.
The response was so overwhelming that over £800 was collected at that same meeting. Soon after, a special committee received over £10,000 in guarantees in Kingston alone. The country parishes raised over $17,000. Additionally, by the end of June of 1890. Isn't that a fascinating story?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. First of all, it is the same things are happening right now, only people might not be as generous. You know, you ask. Right. But he was able, and I like to know what speaks to me from just reading that,
mm-hmm.
is that, first of all, this man never gave up his dream. It was his dream. You know, he was involved in compiling the handbooks for Jamaica. He was involved with the Institute. So when this governor came and he had a chance through his connection to present his idea, because apparently there was a successful exhibition in London's Crystal Palace that he knew about or went to in 1851.
So
he had this passion to do the same thing in Jamaica
for
years. And finally he got his chance. And the governor was so excited about it. He presented it to his gentlemen and instantly got them to put up money.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I was so how animated when I was reading all that.
Yeah, he was in the right circle.
Right, right. And you see, the point is this, it mentioned here, he never gave up on his dream.
Yes, and that is what, who, Fawcett?
Yeah.
What's his name?
No.
Sinclair?
The dream was for Sinclair's dream.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. But apparently Fawcett knew Sinclair.
Oh, okay.
So Sinclair persuaded that one who is he apparently had a bigger position than whatever Sinclair had, because he was the director of gardens and plantations.
Yeah, so he helped him.
He helped him present it to the governor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you know people,
yes,
you get what I mean. You use what you have,
mm-hmm.
and there this project that he had in mind and was passionate about for all this time, never get any buzz. But once he got the right people, he not only got the buzz going, he got money.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So now they have to get to work,
mm-hmm.
because there are things to be done. Now he has a plan. So now, as early as April 1980, I talked about them getting the money. So the country parishes actually collected more than Kingston.
Yes.
But instantly, you know, the Kingston gentlemen put up their money, because everybody was excited, apparently, about the project. Now, remember now, this project is going to bring in foreigners,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
That's the whole thing. That is how it's connected to the hotel industry. I'm telling you, I'm having so much problem with fiddling with my little, whatever you call this little computer here, because now I can't move it. But anyway, let's go back to what I can read here. So he got all this money together, and the Prince of Wales had agreed to serve as patron of the event and indicated that his son, Prince George, the future King George V, would represent him and the royal family. An entire exhibition grounds needed to be constructed, and the Kingston Race Course, now the site of the National Heroes Park, was designated as the most appropriate.
Oh.
So that's actually how all of that got started.
Yeah.
The wooden exhibition building itself was to be built on lands now occupied by Woolmer School, and they got an architect to put the whole thing together. Now, here's my point with this connection. See how this was just, you know, an idea in this man's mind, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
He was passionate about it. He pursued it, even though he was not getting much encouragement. And he finally got somebody that had an interest and knew the right person and got things started. So now they need a place,
mm-hmm.
for the actual event.
Right.
Plans start happening about that. Then they figure they're going to have people coming in on these ships that I mentioned before, because that's all they had then. They didn't have planes, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So now here comes the need for accommodations. You see the connections?
Yes, yes, yes.
So let me go back now to the hotel thing. So the hotels of the Great Exhibition was first the Myrtle Bank Hotel,
mm-hmm.
built in the mid-1800s. The Myrtle Bank Hotel, owned by a Scotsman, James Gall, was converted from a shipyard into a select boarding house and offered personal advice on health issues. That's what it was at first. By 1875, when downtown Christmas bazaars became popular and drew large crowds, no, those were the same bazaars we knew about, you know, when we were growing up. It started from 1875. Did you realize that?
Not really.
Wow. Now, the Myrtle Bank became a recreational and social center. A music stand was erected in the center of its tropical garden, and the West Indies Regiment Band entertained large crowds twice a week. Now, when Gall, G-A-L-L was his name, died, the property was acquired by the government, and a modern hotel with long French windows that open on all sides into verandas was built on the site in preparation for the Great Exhibition of 1891.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was...
They're referring to it as the French doors because it opened into the veranda.
Mm-hmm. It opened into verandas. So apparently it had doors all around and opened. That was the original building.
Yes.
Now, it was destroyed in the 1907 earthquake, and it was reconstructed in 1918 and sold to the United Fruit Company. At that time, it was the largest hotel in Jamaica with 205 rooms and a filtered salt water pool. So actually, that was the first hotel.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes, and a very interesting one it was.
Yes, yes, yes. So I just found that information and the tie-in, you know, to both things. Very, because it would perhaps have eventually gotten started somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually this man's idea that really caused it to come to fruition. You see what I'm trying to say?
Yes, from one.
And get the wheels working. To get something happening so they could start looking around for places to have the event and for places for people to stay.
Yes, yes.
So, man, I just get very excited about that. Okay, so that was only one of them that was involved in the Great Exhibition, but also the Constance Spring Hotel. This was built in preparation for the exhibition, too, with over 300,000 visitors were expected on the island. I'm talking about 18-something, you know, on them ships that take 5 to 6 days to come from New York, and they're traveling, I suppose, with banana, too, or whatever. Not bringing it. But they were bringing the people and taking the bananas. That's what they were doing then.
Yeah, but they were coming from England, too. Who knows?
Right. And England would be a lot longer, I suppose. But and because the exhibition, you know, it was British at the time, and they were going to be most of the people, I'm sure, or the exhibitors would be coming, or the visitors would be coming from England and not America.
Yes, I would think so.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, that was really quite an eye opener for me. Now, the Constance Spring Hotel is credited with being the first building to have electricity and indoor plumbing. So I'm wondering if the other one didn't. It mentioned that one was built in, does it tell me here? But anyway, it was situated on 165 acres. The Constance Spring Hotel had 100 rooms and was known as the Golfer's Hotel because of its 9-hole course, which was extended to 18 holes by 1930. It offered special dining and entertainment options for children, lavish bedrooms, sitting rooms, dining rooms, and parlors, as they call them then, and French chefs. And hairdressing, I mean, they were with it, as well as a gazebo and a magnificent swimming bath. I like how they describe that, not a swimming pool, but a swimming bath. Yet the hotel really turned a profit. And in 1940, it was sold to the Franciscan Sisters, who were looking for a new home for their convent and school.
Immaculate.
Having lost their original location on Duke Street in 1937 to a fire. In 1941, Immaculate Conception School opened with 99 students and 60. Dean Borda's daughters of wealthy Jamaicans, Cubans, Haitians, and Canadian Catholic families.
Yes.
Ain't that something?
Yeah, I had a lot of Bordas. You know, that was my school.
Yes, I know you would be tickled with that information.
Yeah, thanks for telling me that.
But did you know that?
No.
I'm not. I am.
Honest in saying I didn't.
Beg your pardon?
I have to be honest in saying I didn't, but now I know.
Yeah, I think it's so such interesting information. And again, I want to thank Dr. Tortella for making me so happy and tickling my fancy.
Mm-hmm.
But and foreigners or visitors coming by, I suppose, will just enjoy the information, but they can't connect like we can. Because, you know, you are a product of the school. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, it just has a different, you know, it makes a difference for you.
Yes.
Someone who has actually been on the
property.
To know how it started.
Oh, yeah.
And now another hotel was the Queen's Hotel. The Queen's Hotel located at the corner of Haywood and Princess Street in Kingston, you know that's right downtown, was erected to house the working classes at the time of the Great Exhibition. It was built by Colonel Ward, benefactor of the Ward Theatre, to study a want left long felt by county folk that mainly of obtaining in Kingston comfortable quarters at reasonable process within their means. You see how their English was sort of like old English in those days.
Yes.
And I'm reading it, you know, just as it was
written.
And I'm sure Dr. Tortella just copied it from where she got the information, the way it was written too. So if it sounds a little weird, it's because that's how people spoke in those days.
Yes, but
Now, in the years that followed...
I want to also remind you that down in that era, they used to call it the East.
Uh-huh.
That was the in place at the time, you know.
In your time?
Not my time, like in my grandmother's time.
Oh, I got you. Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you said it was all the way down there. It's because that location was the known place at that time. You know, like,
right. Well, what they're saying here, as I gathered from reading this, that the other hotels were very expensive in those days.
Yes.
And so they wanted to have something. At least this man, Mr. Ward, who's the benefactor of the Ward, you know, the Ward Theater.
Yes.
Wanted to have a comfortable quarters at reasonable processes, it didn't say prices, but P-R-O-C-E-S-S, within their means, for the working class people. In the years that followed, Queens was patronized mainly by market women who needed overnight accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
So next come the Manigue Hotel. Not all of the hotels built for the Grand Exhibition of 1981 were located in or near to Kingston.
Right.
The Manigue Hotel, which now is the site of the Manigue Teachers Training College, was built around 1890. In 1904, it advertised itself as the most charming in the island, serving vegetables from its gardens, water from its well, tennis, croquet, and shooting. Visitors traveled by train to Ewerton and were met by a hotel carriage for the journey over Mount Diablo. You remember that?
Yes.
Within the next few decades, when motor cars became fashionable, the train usage declined. The hotel suffered as it was no longer needed as a stopover. Ain't that something? So it would be a stopover because of its location.
Right.
And then the carriages would come up there and pick people up to take them to wherever they want to go.
Right.
I just find that very fascinating information.
I'm telling you, I wish I was born in those days.
Now, I don't know about that, though. That's pushing it.
Oh, yeah, it sounds peaceful to me.
Oh, my God. And it mentions here about the other great hotels. And let me just take a minute to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each week on a Wednesday to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. So if you're interested in history, you're perhaps out in the diaspora someplace and remember the good old days if you visited or you grew up or was sent to or worked in Jamaica, you might find some of our other shows interesting, and you can listen to any of them if you go to Blog Talk Radio itself and Google Backyard Labrish. And not Google, but go on search on Blog Talk Radio. You will come up with the site, or you could just Google or go to www.backyardlabrish.com. And there's an icon to our radio show right there. And then you'll be transported to Blog Talk Radio's page, and you can access any of our archived shows. So we'd like to hear from you. Send us a comment. Let us know what you'd like us to talk about. We just talk about anything that tickle our fancy. We're not necessarily always politically correct. We don't discuss politics or religion. We're here just to research information we find interesting and just put our own little twist on it. Right, Janine?
Right.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you also for being a loyal fan. And I want to really thank all the people who are posting and sending me information, and I appreciate you all. Please continue to help us celebrate and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. You know, there are so many people now that are, you know, people all over the world are interested in Jamaica. And there's a lot of representation online by all the young folks that are contributing in different ways and all the different Jamaican websites that are out there. And, of course, the Gleaner Company that has been a stable for many, many generations. However, in here in the backyard, we mostly talk about things that would impact us or that we can relate to when we were growing up in Jamaica before independence. So I want to just explain that to the visitors who may come by later what we are all about. So do join us. We are here each week, and we would appreciate you telling your friends about us. So now I'm going to talk about another one, which I happen to know, Janine. It's the it can be Rio or Ryokobi Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of that one?
I think I have, but I don't remember much about it. Maybe
you remember where it was?
No, remind me.
Spanish Town! And I'll tell my little story about it afterwards. But let me read from the pieces of the past. How do you say it? Ryokobi or Ryokobi? R-I-O.
Rio.
Ryokobi. That's what I say, too. A small hotel in Spanish Town was named after the river running through the property. 2 stories and 27 rooms. It had a high reputation for Creole cooking and a couple's rate of, are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
6 shillings per day.
Oh, man.
So as I read about couples group,
yes.
I said, you know, we have a couples hotel now.
Yes,
you know, a
yes.
Big time couples hotel. Isn't that
That's
something?
That's the name of it, couples.
Yes, 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 yes. But as I was going through this, I was really just so fascinated. Now, another good example. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the Ryokobi Hotel. It was eventually converted into us. In the old days, we had reform schools. Remember those boys' schools?
Yes.
Where orphans would go, or boys that didn't have any parents or were getting into trouble would go to this special school. It was usually a religious school, you know, run by some religion, and they would be accommodated, fed, and taught.
Yes.
And I remember those days. That's why we didn't perhaps have a lot of the problems that now exist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But anyway, it was converted by one of the religions, and my father, I moved to Spanish Town because my father was an assistant minister at, I don't know if anybody will remember this, I don't even remember the name of the religion, but there were the Huckabees that were in Jamaica at the time, and this would be in the late 30s, because I was born in 35. So I remember them having this boys' school at this place with the 27 rooms. I was just a little kid. And they had a church, too. The church wasn't at the same place. But I remember going to the hotel a lot of times. Not hotel. It was a boys' school at the time, you know, a reform school.
Yes.
Where they were reforming these young boys. So my mother and father would take me there because that's where the minister and his wife lived. You know, and they had other people doing the you know, whatever they were doing at the time. But I didn't realize that it was a former hotel. So that was quite fascinating to me. So here is another one that they're talking about. And all of these hotels sort of got started around the time to coincide with this great exhibition time. Another good example is the Mandeville Hotel. And this was set 2,000 feet above sea level in a cool Manchester hills. In 1875, buildings formerly used as British officers' quarters were converted into the Waverley Hotel. In 1898, it was taken over by a Miss Jane Brooks, and the 17-room hotel became known as the Brooks Hotel, and then as the Mandeville Hotel. In its early days, the Mandeville Hotel was famed for its distinguished patronage. It had wonderful cuisine and special events such as the flower show dance. So that each one of the hotels were known for different things.
Yes.
Now, in 1971, new buildings replaced the old, this is quite recent, the old structure. In the mid-1980s, the present owners, the McIntyres, took over the reins, adding their own personal touches, such as the reintroduction of the hotel's traditional work, you know, fretwork, the little, do you know those tiny little etchings and things that are made out of wood?
Yes.
That they put in the front of the place and all over. The real old-time houses used to have them.
Yes.
Well, apparently these people love antiques. So they had it redone.
Oh.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
Now, many small hotels, such as the Mona Hotel, was also converted from great houses. Once the residence of the owner of the Mona Sugar Estate, on part of what is now the University of West Indies, the Mona Hotel provided open-air dining, when it was a hotel they're talking, and offered trips to nearby Hope Botanical Gardens.
That's
like the Mona Hotel, Shaw Park, Eaton Hall, Triall, and Richmond Hill Hotels were also formerly estate homes. So they didn't actually build these hotels from scratch, but in most cases they converted something that was already existing.
Oh, so where they have UC was a hotel before.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah, definitely. And it used to have open-air events, open-air dining. I mean, that sounds like elegance.
Yes, what
now, do you remember must have been the 50s, that they had open-air night, the open roof nightclubs. I remember there was one out on near the airport. What is the name of it? But you were like dancing under the stars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes, because in the roof, it was like a circle. A circle was cut out of the roof. I mean, you don't help if it rains, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, I can't remember the name of it, and I must ask any listener that might know the name of that hotel, that nightclub. It was a nightclub. But as they talk about the open air dining here, beg your pardon?
Where was it?
It was if you were going to the airport, which was out that way. Casa, I don't know. It's not coming to me. But it was in my day of dating. That was where my husband and I went there quite a bit.
Oh, so it's going
live. We had live band, and Sugar Belly was big at that time. You know, he played a saxophone.
It was like going to Harbor View.
I don't know where Harbor View is. I moved before Harbor View.
Well,
I don't know Harbor View. But it would be like you're going towards the airport. It would be going toward. It might even have been further than where you make a right to go to the airport. I don't. Does the name Adastra ring a bell to you?
Yes, I know that name, Adastra.
I don't remember if that's the name of the club. But I just, as I was reading about the open air dining in what was formerly the on the grounds of where UC is now, I thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about Port Antonio, which is where the big start was given to tourism, really. A lot of people would believe that it started in Montego Bay,
yeah,
but it actually didn't. It started in Kingston and Port Antonio,
yeah,
because people, visitors came in. I just wanted to do a little footnote on the exhibition,
mm-hmm,
and the documents, and it's very interesting reading. I invite our listeners and encourage you, if you like history, to go by and check out pieces of the past. Dr. Tortello's article on the Great Exhibition of 1891. However, it mentioned that that event was not a financial success. You know, the people didn't make money on their money. But most of the people who contributed money didn't care because it was such a success in other areas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And as we mentioned, that they gave so freely when it was presented to them by the governor, they just apparently gave from the heart,
right,
because they thought it was a worthy project. So to me, you know, the tie-in that it might not have been a moneymaker,
mm-hmm,
per se, but it ignited so many positive things.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That to me, that makes it exciting. Mm-hmm. And it shows you that when you have a vision or a passion, and you are true to it, the vision and the passion, you know, things might not always work out exactly the way you think,
mm-hmm,
but it will be successful. But because here we are talking about this man,
yes,
who, if he didn't have the idea, it would not have started all of this at the time.
Wouldn't have started the hotel.
Right. It's not a hotel. You know, they developed the place where the event was held.
Right.
And I think I went into a lot of more details when I did a show just on the exhibition itself. There's one show that you can access to the people who want to research it. Just look in the archives for the show on the exhibition of 1891. So let me tell you a little bit about more now about Port Antonio. Port Antonio, of course, as you know, Janine, but most of our visitors to the show may not know, the capital. Port Antonio is the capital of the parish of Portland. So it is like the big downtown, let's call it that way. Only that it's not really a big downtown. It wasn't then. And I don't even think it is now, because Kingston and Spanish Town have always been mentioned so much, you know,
yeah,
and other towns. But you don't have a lot about Port Antonio, except the celebrities that we spoke of the other day, of Errol Flynn and, you know, all of those others.
Right.
But anyway, the town, I'm not going to go into the town getting its name, but do you know they have a twin harbor there? It's two harbors. It was ideal for trade and defense. Mm-hmm. And it because it had a different, a difficult terrain, you know, so it was hard to attack. So it was good as a defending post during the days of the, you know, when the British people were always trying to fend off somebody.
Yes.
When they had those kind of wars.
Mm-hmm.
So how it got to be a tourist thought was the fact that this entrepreneur, who is Mr. Baker, was his name, he saw the potential for tourism to the sunny tropical destination and established the first cruise ship to and from Port Antonio. Not only did Baker import bananas, now he also ferried visitors from the wintry New England state. They came from New England first, to the sunny island paradise of Port Antonio in his empty banana boats. In 1905, the town's first hotel was built on the Titchfield Peninsula, and curious tourists were soon rubbing shoulders with the rich and famous.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't that something?
Yes.
Because now hear me out now.
Mm-hmm.
So see, even then people were multitasking and trying to figure out. Now, he had boats apparently taking bananas to New England,
yes.
Right? So he figured, why don't he bring, instead of bringing back empty boats, bring back some people?
Yeah, makes sense.
So that's what started it. I am telling you, it is so fascinating to me. And I just said, wow, this is something else. It really is. So, as I said, most people would think that tourism originated in Montego Bay because of its beauty. But actually, from the description here, you know, Port Antonio might be further away from the, you know, getting off on a plane and things like that. But in those days, because of its twin port, it was easy to get the ships there,
yeah,
I suppose.
They say it's very beautiful over there. Oh,
yes. I have been, as a youngster, I went to on a camping trip with the YWCA, and we stayed in the, whatever was left of the Titchfield Hotel, you know, in the Titchfield Hotel area.
Yes.
And it's just absolutely gorgeous. And I happened to have spent my honeymoon in Port Antonio, and that was the last time I went there. It wasn't the first, because I'd gone as a child and a young person, and then when I got married, because I remembered how beautiful it is, I selected to go there for my honeymoon.
Yeah.
But I've not been back since 1957.
Oh.
And one of the things I would like to have on my to-do list,
yeah,
is to visit it again.
Yes, they say it's very cool there too, you know.
Yes, yes, yes.
I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
But that, you know, we're sort of running out of time, but, and I know I'm always babbling about, I go off on, you know, another subject. But however, you know, that's where the hotel industry got started initially, by that law that they passed, or, you know, giving 3% to the people who invested in the thing because,
yeah,
of the exhibition,
yeah,
that they had,
yeah,
at the time. And people came from all over to that.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a success, not financially, but in terms, I suppose, of getting the island known, getting all the possibilities at the time,
mm-hmm,
that could be done there,
and
known,
yeah,
to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And it brought in a lot of people from foreign countries after that. The exhibition itself did. And some of them stayed or made arrangements to come back.
Yes, yes.
You know, so it sort of started a boom.
Yes.
So I always think it is so fascinating when I come upon stories where one person with a particular passion that pursued it and somehow brings it, you know, give birth to it,
yes.
How it's still existing in some form, might not be in the same form or the original form. And a lot of people really don't care about how it originated. Mm-hmm. But the point I'm trying to make, you know, a little, what might seem like a small desire or passion or act can really blossom,
yes,
into something of so much richness,
mm-hmm,
and so much good that it comes out of it. Because look what's that, you know, tourism is one of the
biggest,
most important trade in Jamaica now.
Yes, yes.
Industry, I mean,
yes,
in Jamaica now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything, it would have started anyhow, but I just thought that it was interesting to find the roots,
yes,
and to connect the dots. So with that said, Miss Janine and all the other callers on the board and online, unless you have some parting words, I am going to say good night. Janine, would you like to elaborate on anything? I know you're the only vocal person we have on the board tonight. We have other callers, but they're not putting up their hands. I want to tell them I do appreciate them being here and hope they'll come often and also tell their friends.
I just want to say perseverance will make you conquer, and exactly what you're saying, you know, when you have that feelings to do things or I forget the word now, a senior moment, it's just like, it's just like what you're doing, the love of what you're doing, and some good will come out of what you're doing.
That's right. And I want to mention to our listeners that you can find us here each week at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday. We're always talking on something that we hope will be of interest, but you can also access the show anytime online. You can go to www.backyardlabrish.com, and that spell, you know how to spell backyard, and Labrish is spelled Labrish. And we have lots of interesting shows that you can listen to in your spare time while you go through your email or do whatever else. So I want to thank you so much for coming by and ask you to come often and tell your friends. So Miss Janine and all the callers on the board, I thank you for being here. And I look forward to seeing you next week. And if you would like us to, I want to mention one thing, and that is that I'm always looking for senior citizens to interview that might have memories of growing up in Jamaica at a particular time before independence, or if you know of someone that is doing something interesting and has some stories from the past, we would love to have them on the show, because that's what the Labrish is all about,
amen,
to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. All together now, Miss Janine, what comes after that?
Amen.
What land we love.
I'm just testing you.
Okay.
Amen is after that.
Yes.
God bless everyone.
All right. And I want to challenge all of my listeners, as I always end my show, because I know you have the power to make it a great week.
And just to say, my aunt is coming along. She's taking one day at a time, but thank God.
Well, please tell her that we do wish her well and pray for her,
yes,
and look forward to having her on the show again.
Yes, I will tell her. And please continue to pray for her. She's still not out of the woods yet, but she's still doing pretty good.
Thank you so much, Janine.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye.
God bless.
See you all next week.
Okay. God's
willing.
Bye.
Thanks so much.